This is John Walton, and you're listening to the Power Play Point Podcast with the Blue Liner on point and Anna Knox. Here's Wilson, and on the right side, and he scores!
Welcome once again to the Power Play Point Podcast. This is your host, the Blue Liner on Point, talking to you live to tape from beautiful downtown Glen Burnie, Maryland. And so I'm not going to be without the mermaid again this week. She's actually on a holiday break for a few weeks. So graciously consenting to co-host with me for this week is a guy we've had on before. mentioned him a few times, kind of wanting to bring him on to bring another point of view of how to watch Caps games, because our goal here, one of the goals here at the podcast anyway, is to make you, the Caps fan, a better hockey fan overall. So I'd like to bring him on now. It's Blake Allen of the Chirpin' DMV podcast. Blake, how are you doing this evening?
Doing well. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Thanks again for doing this tonight.
Always happy to join.
Yeah. Yeah. Great to have you. Great to have you. So you've been on with us before. We had you on last season, I believe, to go over kind of do a hockey 101, analytics 101 with our listeners. So but just in case they've forgotten who you are. So we're going to ask the usual questions. How'd you get started? How and when did you get started as a Caps fan?
Yeah, so my dad had family from Canada, and I was born and raised in D.C., so it was just kind of a natural fit for me to become a Caps fan. I started becoming a Caps fan in, like, the late 90s, so probably, you know, my earliest memories probably are from the year that we went to the Cup, although I didn't quite understand Cup run and all that at that time, the 98 Cup run, and so like my favorite player growing up was Richard Zednik until, of course, Ovechkin came along.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's how I got started in watching hockey. And then I played youth league at Ashburn.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So where are you talking to us from tonight?
I'm talking to you from Fairfax, Virginia.
Fairfax. Nice. Yeah. Nice. So down in the Commonwealth. All right. That'll work. That'll definitely work. So what do you think of the Cap season so far?
I think it's been great. They look like a wagon. I hope that there's been a couple of games the last couple of weeks that kind of give me a cause for concern, but I hope they're just losses that happen over the course of a season and not the start of a trend.
Right. Right. You and me both. There's a few, some would call nitpicky things that I'm seeing that I'm not been happy with, but overall, better than expected, I would think, given the fact that a lot of so-called pundits and experts wrote this team off. So
we were supposed to be bad before we got hurt, and then we got hurt, and we're like top five in the league in terms of like points percentage. So
right, and it's open a lot of eyes, and I just, you know, for me, I just hope they keep it going. I just, you know, like you said, there's cause for concern. I just hope they haven't hit a wall, but the optimist in me wants to say that they won't, but we'll see.
Yeah.
All right. So let's just go ahead and jump into the on ice action. So three games played, two wins in the shootout and one regulation loss. The first of those three games were the second half of the four game homestand against the Anaheim Ducks this past Monday night. So it was a 4-3 win in the shootout. So Tom Wilson opens the scoring at 13:34 in the first, his ninth, assisted by Schultz and Ovechkin, who's been an Apple machine lately.
Yeah.
That's bit surprising, but also good to see.
Backstrom's back on the ice in the form of Ovechkin.
Yeah, that's a good observation. Backstrom reincarnated, only he's wearing number 8. That's one way to put it. This was kind of a back and forth, up and down game. Anaheim got one back. Manson his third. Milano and Zegras his 14th assist. He's having a pretty good campaign. And then the spotted unicorn, the return of the dodo, the UFO sighting, whatever the hell you want to call it, finally happened. Carl friggin' Hagelin finally gets his first of the year.
Hags, baby.
At 3:58 in the second, Lars Eller and TJ Oshie with the assist to bring it 2-1. That also in the second. Sonny Milano ties it 10 minutes later.
I think Carl Hagelin has scored right before both times I've come on your podcast. So maybe we need to do this more often. That'll get Hagelin some more goals.
Maybe so. Now that we've broached the subject, I've kind of been getting into it with some of my fellow fans on the various Facebook pages we post on. And so here's how the discussion seems to go about him. You got your one side. He's worthless. He doesn't put points on the board. And therefore, his contract is too much, and we'd be better off shedding that salary. And the other side of the argument is, well, he's a valuable penalty killer, and that's what we signed him to do, is to help kill penalties and with his speed provide defensive coverage. We didn't sign him to score 50 goals a year and put all these points on the board. So you should know what you get. Where do you come in on that argument?
A little column A, a little column B. I think not every player needs to be scoring like crazy, not every forward even. And I think to expect that of him is a little silly. But I also would like to see a bit more from him than we've seen away from the puck. Like, he's not been as... Like to me, since Carl Hagelin is just so snake bit, he's clearly, lost the ability to find the net. He needs to be a guy who we can count on to, put up really solid analytics, so to speak. Like, he needs to be making solid plays. He needs to, be keeping pucks away from our net and be getting them towards the other team's net. And he hasn't done that as well as he did last season.
Yeah, he just – I don't know what it is. I think the lack of scoring and the being snake bit is kind of how do I put this? It's distracts from the fact that, yeah, like you said, he's a bit off in terms of that. But to me, he's still a valuable penalty killer. And the point I tried to make in one of these rooms was that a good penalty killer will prevent anywhere from 10 to 20 goals a season. That's where he has his worth. And further still, I think the people have a problem with him is because of that contract. It's really a duplicated situation of when we had Richard Ponick. He has worth. The man has worth. It just doesn't show up on the score sheet. And unfortunately, they overpaid.
Yeah,
is the problem.
The thing with Ponick was more reliable, though. I think like Ponick was always planted right up in the good corner of my chart that I post every couple of days. He was always right up in the good corner, and Hagelin bounces up and down. Like, sometimes you'll see him up there, but a lot more often he hovers around that 50% line.
So before we go any further, now the chart you're referring to, I'm assuming that's the expected goals for metric.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah. Yep.
Right. So let's kind of rehash that a bit. So I'm familiar with that chart. I probably have all the math skills, to be honest, as a beauty pageant contestant. but I think I've got the hang of reading that. You got your sliding scale that it accounts for the expected goals which measures the productivity on ice per 60 minutes for every player, and you've got your four quadrants. That's where I'm kind of fuzzy. The four quadrants, but depending on where you're at per 60 minutes, you're either on the good side of being productive or you're not, is what it comes down to.
Right. And it also factors in expected goals against, which helps us get a grasp on defense as well.
Right, exactly. So it measures those two metrics at the same time. So depending on which quadrant you're in, you're helping to prevent goals, but you're not putting up points, which would fall into that dull category, I suppose. Right. Or you're putting up points and you're keeping the other guy off the score sheet too, which is that the fun quadrant?
The fun quadrant is you're putting up points, but you're also letting the other team put up points.
Right. Okay. I think I got it now.
Yeah. When you are putting up good numbers and you're preventing the other team from putting up good numbers.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Well, learn something new every day.
I didn't come up with the good, bad, fun, dull four corners thing. That I think Micah Blake McCurdy invented that. And I use it. Just to give credit where it's due.
Cool. Very cool. So I'll be posting that from time to time on our Facebook page, just so our listeners will get familiar with that. But that useful metric to keep your eye on. Okay, so let's kind of zip through the rest of the recap. We all know what happened. We saw what happened. Anaheim jumped out to a 3-2 lead, and then John Carlson ended up tying it in the
McNugget minute
in the second, and and it was 3-3 for the remainder of the game. So to overtime we go, and nothing there, and then Carlson again. For all his faults, for all my yelling at him and and wanting, well, I don't want bodily harm to come to him, but I just wish he would play a little bit better defense when it's more critical. He scores the game winner in the shootout, thus ended the game. 2 points for the good guys, thank goodness. So
yeah.
He's another bone of contention. So I do the metrics back me up on that? And of course the key is going to, for him, at least in my eyes, is going to be expected goals against per 60. How is he measured up there?
He's been significantly better than he was last season. He's above the 50% line. He had a slow start defensively, but him and Fairvar really, really came together. And I think that since, and I don't have the exact numbers, but like since the first like 5 to 7 games, like after that, their defensive numbers like improved dramatically, which is good to see.
Yeah, surprisingly, him, Carlson and Fairvari have been an appropriate match. I really didn't think that was going to work. But
me neither.
when you take into account that Fairvari is the far superior skater, and this is where having the eye for things helps. It does translate into overall better coverage. Yeah. Now, does Fairvari he actually have the best XGA per 60? Over the course of the season, over the 6 or 7 that have regularly played, do the numbers bear that out?
No. Orlov and Jensen are the top pairing in terms of analytics.
Okay. Yeah. That, you know what? That does not surprise me at all.
Yeah.
given how well they've both played. But I think part, I hate to say this, but part of that is as long as, and I really like those two, but as long as they don't get more than, say, 18 to 22 minutes a game, mm-hmm. if you limit them both to that, if they get much more than that, I think they tend to tire and be more mistake prone. So as long as the game plan stays that way, they don't become the minute munchers. I think that that'll stay. That'll be, they'll be the most effective pair, the middling pair, which, you know, is what you need to do to maintain a game. And that's what I find. That's what these, hockey analytics is all about. It's about what happens between the goals.
Yeah.
That how it measures how players play, how they perform. That's mainly to me what the analytics is for. It fills in those holes that say your traditional stats, like your plus minus, your goals against, you know, time on ice, that kind of thing. It fills in those gaps that, you know, isn't told by, you know, what I call the, you know, the usual statistics, the vitals and all that. So,
Yeah.
So, okay. So thank goodness for, I never thought I'd say this, but thank goodness for the shootout. And, okay. So, 3 days later, it was the end of the homestand against the Penguins. And this is probably the game that we're going to do something of a deep dive on, because you and I both mentioned trends that think starting to crop up that are a bit disturbing if they remain habits. So we talked about preparing and having numbers. Hopefully you have numbers specific to this game, but the GA per 60 had to be bad all the way around for this team, because it was just, do the numbers bear out as bad as this team looked on ice defensively?
Let me pull that up real quick, but I think they did. I think it was ugly.
Yeah.
The Caps had a good second period in terms of expected goals.
Uh-huh.
And that was it. Everything else was ugly. The third period, when they were, you know, down a bunch and they should have been attacking and should have, you know, really been going after the Penguins, did 36% of expected goals. Like, that's atrocious.
Yeah, for a team that is ranked among the top five in goals scored, yeah, that's pretty bad. And
they had 43% of expected goals, but adjusted, that's 36. Adjusted for what the score was. So with
that metric, expected goals for, you want to look for something around 50% or better, I would assume. Is that correct?
Yeah, 50% or better. 50% or above is good. 55% is really good. 60% is bonkers.
Right. So have there been any times that the Caps as a team approached or crossed the 60% threshold?
Yeah, during the second period of that Penguins game, there was a game this year where I think they had 65% expected goals for the game or something. Like, they absolutely, it was, I don't remember if it was the Sabres or who, but I think it might have been the Sabres a while ago, and they just absolutely crushed.
Yeah. And we'll get to that game, but that also was
Sabres game, I should clarify.
Right. No, not right. Certainly not the one they just played, which we'll get to in a moment. But to briefly go over the scoring summary, Penguins jumped out to a 3-0 lead by the time the game was half over. And of course, you know, the guy we were just talking about being missing, Ferravari, I think had something to do with the breakdown. Although now that I look over these replays, it didn't look to me like the forwards were doing a very good job in back checking. So if you jump to the plus minus in particular, Lars Eller and Connor McMichael did not have a very good game. TJ Oshie was a -2. Now, look, I get plus minus doesn't tell the whole story, but at the very least, that says that, you know, since Lars Eller scored a goal, he was on the ice for at least two goals, two out of the four against. And three, not if you don't count the empty netter. So
yeah. Hold on.
So what I was going to ask while you were looking is how did the forwards look? Was there any forward you would point out that had a really bad game that night for GA60?
Specifically goals against or expected goals against?
Yeah.
Expected goals against. Yeah. Eller had a bad, he had a rough night. He had the most expected goals against. Now that obviously doesn't count for ice time. But Eller was rough. Sherry was not great. The Malinston Protus Leeson line, I'm positive that they are getting very sheltered minutes. But their analytics have been good. So at least they're doing what you should do against easier opponents.
Right. Right. So, and that's something else that analytics takes a look at for those who are new to those type of statistics. They also take a look at what's called the quality of competition. They take that into account. So good of you to point that out. Sorry, I didn't mean to throw you off.
No, you're good. I generally try to. So not all of the numbers take that into account, but whenever I discuss a number, I usually try to at least keep in mind who they're facing. So Malinston Protus Leeson has been good. Somebody who I've liked lately, surprisingly, has been Justin Schultz.
Really?
I was very frustrated with that guy at the end of the year, and then he started off bad at the start of this season. But his numbers have actually really improved since. Pull up his numbers. I think he's been right in the top quadrant of my graph for the last few games.
Oh, that's interesting, because I've been more impressed with his offensive play.
Yeah,
but more disappointed with his defensive play lately.
He's been up there. His offense has definitely been really good. That I would point out in particular. I'm sure he's been getting a lot of help from Trevor Van Riemsdyk up until Trevor got COVID or
right.
was a close contact or whatever it is that gets you on COVID protocol. But yeah.
Okay. Cause I'm not sure this is where, you know, this is where you need numbers to back you up, but something with, you know, Schultz is that, I don't know. It's that, I don't know what quality about him where I kind of get a little nervous when he's on the back line defending. Somebody else that I have the exact opposite evaluation of another defender, a guy who's gotten time because of what you just mentioned, TVR being out due to COVID, Matt Irwin. I would imagine his expected goals for, because at least his Corsi anyway, is, and Corsi again, that's the metric that measures the shots directed at the net. And so it's like plus minus for shots directed at the net, whether or not you're on ice for or against those. I would imagine that metric for Matt Irwin is, you know, pretty close to through the roof. But on the other end of things, he's pretty bad. I'm seeing a lot of bad habits from him. He's doing the go down on one knee like, you know, he's on The Bachelorette or something. You know?
Yeah, I'm not a big Matt Irwin guy. I much prefer Van Riemsdyk. Now, Van Riemsdyk currently, for my last 10 games graph, he's currently listed as bad. But I think that's just, you know, I think that's a quirk because he's been missing time. Because didn't he also miss a game injured?
Yes, he did. Yes, yeah. That's true. He did miss one game.
Yeah. So I would say TVR hasn't been great. He hasn't been what he can be. But I also don't think he's quite as bad as the numbers make him look right now. I would definitely prefer to have him back as soon as possible.
I would too. I think he's good for those bottom 6 minutes that where, you know, you just need to do all the right things to keep a lead or ice a game or something like that. He's good for that. You ask much more of him, probably not going to get a whole lot. He'll chip in the odd goal, but yeah, he's probably good for bottom 6 minutes only.
He's not a world beater.
No, not by, and that's, you know, and that's not a knock on him.
You don't need to be a world beater.
You just, you know, there are some guys that, you know, are good at being caretakers on the ice, and you know, you don't need 20 all-stars on the ice every game.
It'd be nice, but
it'd be nice
how the world works.
That's just not how the game works. So, but yeah, that's so. I mean, it didn't look like the forwards were into back checking in this game, and you know, it just looked to me, and the first goal was the most telling to me. You know, McMichael was trailing the play, and I don't know. It looked to me like he had just given up, and there's a little bit of mounting criticism I'm finding of his game. So I think if he wants to stay, if he doesn't want to be, you know, fall into danger of being a healthy scratch when we start to get some guys back, which
could be soon.
I hope is soon.
Yeah,
at least. So yeah, I think he's to prove his worth, because he's not going to get, what are his goals for 60 bear out, because he strikes me as a forward that's probably going to get you maybe 25 to 30 a year.
So is do you want his individual goals?
His individual goals for per 60. Well, his expected.
Okay, so the ones that he has attempted.
Right.
Give me just a moment to pull them up.
Sure. I realize I'm putting you on the spot here.
But no, you're good.
Yeah, I feel like a guy who's in Vegas for the first time just discovered slot machines.
No, it only usually takes me a few seconds to pull up a player.
You're cool. And usually, while you're doing that, your main resource, if I recall right, is naturalstattrick.com.
Yeah, that's the one I use for the vast majority of things.
Cool.
A lot of the cool graphics I get from HockeyViz.
Yeah, and that's the one, if I'm not mistaken, also has the heat maps.
Yes, that's where I got my heat maps from. And then that's also where I took the format for my so. HockeyViz doesn't publish individual data points. He just publishes graphs and charts, right, and heat maps. So if I want to make my own kind of, but based on his style, I'll go to like Natural Stat Trick and just kind of put that into a similar format as HockeyViz. But if it's, you know, the super advanced viz, then I use his stuff.
Right.
So he's on pace for about one expected goal an hour. He's only scoring 0.62 goals per hour though, which is, you know, not what you want. That's kind of, you watch him play and that kind of matches up. He's getting a lot of really good opportunities right in front of the net and then just can't find a way to get it in.
Yeah. Yeah. And that doesn't concern me as much. I just want him to be more defensively responsible. And I think he'll earn his time based on that. And the sooner he learns that, the better. So once he, you know, once he knocks down that aspect of his game, I really think he'll be, you know, a lot more worth, you know, some more ice time.
Yeah. His expected goals is a little bit above team average. Expect goals against, but you know, I'd agree, could be better for especially for a guy who, you know, in theory should be in the top six in the future.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm not giving him a 100% pass, but this is his first full year, and probably a first full year under what to him is probably a complete new scheme going both ways. So again, my knock on him right now is I want to see more back checking from him, knock down that GA per 60 number, that XGA for 60 number for him. Once he gets that down much lower, proves he's more responsibility, I think then you're going to see him being trusted a lot more. But I mean, what I definitely don't want to see is stuff like what happened on that on the first goal of the game, where he was just, I mean, the guy was left all alone in front, and had there been some back checking, that wouldn't have happened, and most likely, negated that goal to begin with. So
another thing I'd point out about him is that, so his expected goals against is better than average, better than team average, but his actual goals against is worse than team average. So that is something to keep an eye on.
So okay, so now that you've
pointed, that's going to be goaltending, but obviously some of that does, come down to him.
True enough, but now that you've pointed out those two metrics, can you kind of explain the difference between the actual versus the expected?
Yeah, so actual goals is like, it's just if you're on the ice for a goal, that counts as a goal against, right?
Right.
An expected goal is shot attempts, and it's sort of modeled. It's we use a statistical model to kind of estimate how likely it is that that shot would have been a goal, and then we just aggregate them all. So if your expected goals is worse than your actual goals, then that means that like it could either be argued as unlucky, or it's you are allowing situations that can't be accounted for in expected goals. And that comes down to, watching the game. So that's one of those tie goes to the eye test.
All right. It sounds cool. Fair enough. So that's, so in essence, as far as, the most important statistic, the actual goals, it measures your actual on-ice productivity, whereas Corsi is, in one part, right place, right time, but you're helping to drive the play, or you're a detriment to the play. So,
right.
Okay. Yeah. So if you play think driving of it in terms is
a
word that
we use a lot in analytics, play driving. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll go along with that. I mean, it's just, I can't explain. And this is one of the reasons why I'm glad I have you on, but I can't really explain. Sometimes you just don't have an answer for why a team comes out so flat and just doesn't. You would think that this was a game against a hated rival. You would think they would have been up for it, national TV and all that, sort of. I don't know. They just came out flatter than a week old soda that's been open for that long. And
yeah,
they had 3 days rest, and I get the whole, people being on COVID and being ill earlier in the day might've threw some things off, but still, this is a team that for the most part has been together and just, I don't know. They just look really, really flat.
Yeah.
No fire, no energy, no nothing. So, bottom line, what you saw bears out in the numbers. And I don't think this was the make or break of it all, but I think overall, as far as defensive play, could have used some more back checking from the forwards. Severe lack of a 200-foot game, as us old schoolers like to say. So I think that doomed them. I also think that, of course, I'm going to need your opinion on this as well. But I think for the most part, I would say Samsonov was left out to dry in this game.
Yeah. Looking at the heat map from that game, there's just a big pile of red right in front of Samsonov.
Yeah. Yeah, that to me bears that out. That, of course, meaning that that means that the majority of your high danger chances where, you know, somebody has a breakaway, someone's alone in front of the net where it's expected that they score, hence the metric, is occurring. And yeah, if you have a big red spot in front of your goalie, then yeah, you're not doing your job is basically what that means.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think there were some that are really quick to criticize Sammy about that. I honestly don't think any of the three goals he let in were really his fault. The guy was all alone. Second one, it was a deflection off of Kuznetsov's skate.
Yeah.
And, you know, Alan May said something in the coverage in the game after, like, well, he should have had that. He should have had a stick down. But not much you can do with two guys sitting on you and you can't see where it's going anyway. So I think that's a bit of a bad rap on that one. And the third one, well, maybe the third one, he just got flat out beat. But again, not much you could do because it was essentially a 2-on-1 was that third goal. By I believe it was Kasperi Kapanen.
Yeah.
Check the score sheet.
It was.
Kasperi Kapanen with a 3-0, which of course was the game winner. And then Caps had that brief comeback in the third period, Kuznetsov and Eller, making it interesting for a little bit of time. And then Jeff Carter ices it for the game winner. So a stat that you and I talked about when we were going over some notes, suffice to say, all three games, Caps pretty much sucked, and that was the face-off. We'll get back to this in a second. Let's jump over to the Sabres game from last night. That one was another one in the shootout. Great to see Ferravari get the game tire.
I was really surprised to see him back in and not Wilson.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think Wilson's injury was a lot worse than it looked. And again, I refer to Alan May. I think he said he saw Wilson hit his head on the goalpost.
Oh.
When he slid in. So yeah, I was worried that the C word would have been thrown out. And I don't mean COVID. Or the other C word that I can't say since this is a family show. but yeah, nobody has mentioned that yet. And they officially list him as day to day. So it's probably not all that bad, but yeah, he hit the net pretty hard. So I think it's more like an upper body injury where it's his arm or his chest or something. And I thinking we'll see him back sooner rather than later, but of course time will tell.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna spend too much time in the Sabres game because, well, it was your typical Caps game and then it also wasn't. 42 shots on goal overall for the Caps versus 31 for the Sabres. The fact that there were 73 total shots in this game, well, I mean, means it was a good offensive effort to me, but a bad defensive effort overall. Do you have any specifics as far as the analytics for this game either way?
Not particularly. I will say the third period is particularly good for the Caps. I will be honest, I missed that game.
Which is weird to me. Looks lately the third period has been the best period for the Caps. And that, as recently as 2 weeks ago, that wasn't the case. That was where they'd stop playing. But I mean, so if there's one good trend, there's that. But
they fixed the was it the Panthers or the Blue Jackets with the epic collapse, the four goals against
the Panthers.
Yeah. So
yeah, I remember that game
for that game. So thank goodness for that.
Yes. I'll agree with you there because that was an horrific collapse of that game. And they, like the coach said, they literally stopped playing. So yeah, I think message received definitely after that one, because like I said, the third period has somehow become the best period, at least trending these last few games. But as I mentioned a few minutes ago, all three of these games, the face-off statistic, okay, let me just spit this one out for this game anyway, against the Sabres. 38.3 win percentage.
Not great.
Not great. I'll even go as far as to say piss poor.
That's fair assessment.
But here's the thing. And this is my bone of contention, basically, with analytics. How do you know when the face-off metric is, well, an important statistic to follow, if not the most important? Because when you get down to it, Caps ended up still outshooting the opposition for the most part. Well, at least in this game, not in the loss so much, or at least keeping up. In all three games, they weren't not this bad, but all three games they were not even 50%, barely under. And the two out of the three games they managed to win, or at least appear competitive. So when do you count faceoff percentage as something to behold? And when do you not? Because it's really hard to say.
So this is something that I have been screaming about for a long time. I do not care about faceoffs. The only faceoff I care about is the first faceoff of a power play. I really wish I had numbers on specifically the first faceoff of a power play. I don't. But just watching the Caps when they win a faceoff versus when they don't. Just how much that impacts how effective that particular power play is. I can feel it in my bones that there is a number there that would prove it. Cause it's so drastic. But I genuinely could not, unless it's really, really bad, in terms of face-off percentage. If it's really, really bad, then I start to get worried. But as we saw, 38% is pretty bad, and we still won that game. I think there's a few things at play. I think some of it is how a faceoff win is defined. So, like, if you win it back, you get it. But if the next person to touch the puck is on the opposite team, that's not really a win, even though you got it to go where you want it to go. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So
yeah,
I think some of it's house calculated. And I think Kuzi himself, in an interview a couple years ago, when people were like roasting him for his face-off ability, he basically brought that up, and I was like, you know what? That's right. So I think it's far less about what happens on the actual face-off versus the 5 to 10 seconds following the face-off that matters. Like,
right.
You lose a face-off, but you cover your guys properly and you get a takeaway. Well, then the face-off didn't matter. And I think that's right. Very frequent. So it's partially how it's calculated. Part of it is, even if it's calculated in a sort of accurate way, so to speak, like, then the things that happen after have more of an impact. And then, it only impacts the first few seconds, and maybe it affects a shot attempt. Or two or three, but that's about it. And
they need to invent a metric that not only takes in, just like you said, not only takes into account the win, but the possession and what happens on that possession.
Yeah.
There needs to be a metric that measures that.
Yeah. And ultimately, if you like graphically and mathematically like compare the effect of shot attempts and expected goals against win percentage versus how faceoff percentage effect, it's like negligible compared to shot attempts. I do not care about faceoffs except for the first faceoff of a power play.
Yeah, definitely. But so And that's going to take that. That would take, good God, that would probably take a lot of eyes on tape to recover that kind of information. But
there's a way to do it that with the data that we have, but it would just take me so long. Like, I have a job.
Wait, yeah. A bit off topic here. We're going to veer off course. I guess I should have asked you this before we got into things, but I just wanted your take on things. I couldn't wait for that. But what is your job? What do you do for the almighty paycheck?
I do data analysis. I probably won't get further into it than that for privacy reasons, but I do indeed do data analysis.
So is it okay? So you don't have to say, but is it based on or do you work with anything with regard to information technology analyzing said data?
No, I mean, I do use programming software to analyze data, but I don't. So I do a little bit of coding, but not a ton.
Well, the reason I ask because I'm also in IT, so I'm kind of feeling, a bit of a kinship here because I seem to end up finding guys like me who are in that field. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of feel I got from you. As far as that, but
I'm not too great with computers. My wife's much better at computers than I am. She just agreed with me from the other room.
Oh, no, that's cool. I mean, you're far better. You're far better that, and at numbers at least. So
yeah,
I do like the human element as far as IT goes. You have to know, you have to have knowledge of certain steps. I'm unashamedly a Windows guy. I can't stand Macs.
Me too.
Slings and arrows at me, I don't care, but that's where I am. But get back on track here. I'm not gonna task you with this. It would be great for something like the playoffs, where everything is ramped up 1,000%. But mm-hmm. I think someone like you could actually come up with some sort of metric, even in words are failing me now. It's my a microcosm, just in a small plastic bubble. In a small sampling is what I'm looking at, I guess, looking at trying mm-hmm. to say. If you could come up with something like that, at least for the playoffs, I think that would be invaluable. I think that would be head and shoulders the most valuable analytical data, even though, goals against per 60 and goals for per 60 and Corsi, I think, are the three most valuable metrics right now as far as productivity both ways.
Yeah.
But something like that where you can quantify who wins the faceoff, what happens after they win it, and what the end result is, and who your guy has to be. Somebody like a Nick Dowd is probably going to score very high in that regard, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah, Nick Dowd does – that dude wins a lot of face-offs.
Yeah, and that's – and he does a lot of other things fairly well. But, yeah, that's his wheelhouse, as I like to say.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So, this game against the Sabres, get back to that, essentially a goalie duel. Take a look at the shots. Okay, yeah, 42-31, as I said. Vanacek doing a pretty good job, got 29-31. Good for him. I think he'd gotten a bit of a knock on him because he just wasn't getting the win. So even if it is a against a bottom feeding team like the Sabres. You know, good to see him get a win in the column. So, okay, so now I want to talk about the trends that I'm seeing. I've already discussed one of them, and that's the lack of defensive coverage by the forwards.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also seeing the play kind of breaking down where, and I already mentioned this too, where the third period is the better period, whereas before that, say in the first 19 games or so, they would dominate the first two periods and then turn the switch off in the third period. Now we're seeing the reverse of that. Do you see anything that agrees with that, bears that out at all, or?
If you give me a minute or two,
take your time. And the you know, I think the Sabres game was one of them. Certainly the Pittsburgh game was another example. You could say the same thing happened against Anaheim. You know, they didn't really wake up till the third period, and I don't know. They ended up getting the win for the most part playing like that, but you're not always going to get the win playing like that. And if you approach a playoff game like that, you're as good as dead.
Yeah. So
that's probably the biggest thing that concerns me right now.
Yeah, so in the last
sure, take your time.
So, you know, surprisingly, they've only in the last 2 weeks, they've only scored 5 goals in the third period. The majority of their goals have actually, well, not the majority, but the largest share of their goals come in the second period. Now, I don't have expected goals by period, which is something that I would love to have. But before that,
yeah, that's probably the one knock I have against analytical data. I understand why it does it, but it measures the trend or metric for and on average a 60-minute game, which of course is understandable. It's more realistic that way, but at the same time, one of the key elements in any hockey game is momentum, and
yeah,
it can swing from period to period. So if there was something of a difference based on that, then that would also be something valuable to look at times.
So here's something interesting. Before November 29th, so November 29th is my dividing line for this discussion, because we were talking about how it kind of changed.
Mm-hmm.
It actually changed that. So in the until November 29th, we had more goals in the third period than any other period. And since then, we've actually had more goals in the second period. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, me neither. Let me look at goals against. Because that might be more of a explanatory factor in why it feels like we've played better in the So it's goals against that's really changed. So in that first time period, they were allowing more goals More goals in the second period and in the first part, and more goals in the third period and the last part. So interesting.
Huh. Well,
I'm surprised by that.
yeah. So more goals that they allow in the latter stages of the game, basically.
Yeah.
Just yeah. Nuts. That's in an ass backward sort of way. I think that kind of proves my point though, in that, you know, they might be more productive, but at the same time, at the, I don't know if it's at the cost of more goals against, but they're certainly not, you know, not playing a more sound defensive game in the latter part of the game either. Yeah, that's a bit, baffling, but that's numbers for you. And that's,
yeah.
And it's hockey can be a really hard game to explain.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So yeah, that's a weird one right there. So, but I don't think it'll continue, or at least I think the coaching staff hopefully is, you know,
yeah,
cognizant of that, that that's been happening a lot lately, and will hopefully do, you know, whatever they can to nip that in the bud. Because yeah, you don't want to see a team let down for sure in the last 20 minutes, but you don't want to see them just completely give up and let in goals either because they think they've got the lead. So I don't know. I don't know if it's better for them to have the lead and half-ass it, obviously not, or just be behind and, you know, fight for their life in the last 20 minutes. So it's really, you know, this team has been hard to figure out. I've been watching hockey for 90% of my life and watching this team for that long, at least. And I've never been able to figure that out. So,
yeah.
I mean, the numbers at least make an attempt, but I guess there's really nothing that 100% tells the whole story when it comes down to it. But it helps with, you know, explaining to a point why we see what we see sometimes. And for some, quantifying it is, you know, something of a comforting factor in that. Oh, okay. Well, at least, you know, if you can do the math, you know, that bears it out. And, you know, so the moral of this story I'm trying to get to is, you know, educate yourselves, you yeah. listening out there, you on the other side of the speakers, the earbuds, what have you. Educate yourselves as much as you can. Natural Stat Trick, Hockey Viz was the other site.
Yeah.
As far as visuals, heat maps, statistics, educate yourselves as best as you can, because there's going to come a time you're going to come across fans that try to explain away something and just look bad doing it. So I the goal again is for all Caps fans to be much smarter, much better hockey fans overall, so that when the time comes in discussions, you can stick up for your team as best as you can. So yeah. Hopefully we've done that here with this walkthrough in the week that was in hockey metrics wise. So, so before we end the show, I want to put out something that was very recently posted in the True Capitals Fans Zone. There's a Caps fan by the name of Sarah Elizabeth Smith, who unfortunately her family has had a very unfortunate accident. Her son has broken his leg, and I don't know the exact circumstances, but apparently this is an unexpected medical bill, and it came around the holidays, which of course is a really bad time to be facing anything like that. So there's actually a GoFundMe page that they've put up. It's the link is at that page, and I will be putting that up as well as making a donation myself to that, because we're all about helping out the fellow Caps fan here. So that address is, so the name of the page is Help the Smith Family, and it's a modest goal. The goal is $4,000. They're not asking to be made rich by this thing, just, you know, some help with this fundraiser to handle the cost of this unexpected bill, which, you know, sucks that it comes at the holiday. So, like I say, help out a fellow Caps fan and go to that link and donate if you can. Really, really appreciate that. Also want to give a shout out to, I haven't had him on in a while, the consigliere of the podcast, Chris Levesque. Understand his father-in-law isn't doing very well, so thoughts and prayers to that the Levesque family as well. So hope everything turns out for the better very, very soon also. Okay, so going to jump to previews of coming attractions here. Now, if you have any relevant numbers, shout them out here, Blake, as far as what we can expect. But two games that we're actually going to cover for next week's episode. Capture's still on the road. Wednesday night puck drop, 8 o'clock against the Chicago Blackhawks. And Friday up north to Winnipeg against the Jets. There's a game Sunday night, but it'll air at the same time we're recording, so we won't be recovering that. So it'll be those two games that we cover. Anything we should be expecting for those two, you think?
The Blackhawks have been real bad this year. They got better since they fired their coach for non-hockey reasons, but they've been better, so still someone you want to keep an eye on. I don't have much of a file on the Winnipeg Jets, to be honest.
Not a whole lot. Yeah, it, unfortunately, tend not to get a whole lot of info on the Canadian teams, and I guess that's or the Western teams for that matter, and that's unfortunately, I'll admit, bias on our part, because just don't play them a whole lot. But they just lost their captain due to injury, so it's going to be interesting to see how they play, how they react to that on ice. Just a quick check of the standings. Chicago, as you said, not doing very well. Winnipeg, they're hanging in there. They're on the brink of a wild card. They're fighting for a wild card, so they're not totally bad. So, yeah, they're definitely going to be an X factor. So, going to be hard to figure out that one. And that'll probably make for a more interesting game. But Chicago, I want to see them get revenge against, because I don't think they approached that game the right way first time around. So, would love to see them steal 2 points on the road.
Yeah.
So, all right. Okay. So I think we're going to wrap it up here. Blake, thanks very much again for doing this. And we really hope to have you on again later on down
the road.
Maybe closer to the playoffs. There anything, floor is yours for the next couple minutes or so. Anything you want to plug? Anything you want to put out there?
Yeah. You can obviously always find me at Trippin' DMV. I've been doing the podcast a little bit more often this year. So, I've been on a couple of times. Hopefully I'll be on again soon. And obviously you can always look for my blogs out there. That's about all I've got.
All right. Okay. And where else can they find you besides the blog and the podcast?
You can find my Twitter at AlanCaps1995, StatGuyBlake. I'm always posting fun nuggets and overall health of the team analytically updates. I also do a fun little thing on Twitter. I track what are the odds that Ovi gets 50 goals this season. It's a fun little thing that I put up every so often.
Nice.
Yeah.
And okay, so one last question I have to ask.
Mm-hmm.
If Carl Hagelin scores another goal again.
Gosh.
Will we see another another bartending stunt?
You will not. You will not be seeing that.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure, because I think Anna and I saw that and we were like, oh my God, he's taking his life into his hands there.
Yeah. As soon as I put it up, I knew it was going to happen, and then it did. And then it was awful.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to bring that up, but I kind of have to, because that entertaining as all hell. So thanks for being a good sport about that. Thanks again for coming on with us.
Yeah, thanks again for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, hopefully we'll have you on again. So we're going to stop it here for another episode. We'll be on next week again to cover those two road games, as I mentioned. So For Blake Allen, this is the Blue Liner on Point signing off and reminding you that gamers like to shower a certain way. And of course, it's with steam. Nothing? Stonewalled. I guess you're not a gamer.
No. Oh. Oh, with steam. Oh, I... Give me a minute. Okay, yeah, that was good.
Sorry about that. I love doing that, and yet I hate doing that, but...
No, that was great. That took me a second. Okay, I got you now.
Okay, all right. Sorry about that. Just a thing we do here. Hallelujah, and let's go Caps.
Go Caps.
This has been another episode of the Power Play Point Podcast. All episodes are available from Apple Podcasts, the Podbean app, blueliner77.podbean.com, and now available from Stitcher. Music by Joe McAllister, voiceover by Jeffrey Conkle.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, Power Play Point Podcast. Thanks for listening.